Yeah. Here we are. We are here, Rock to Recovery Radio on KX93.5 FM. Laguna's only FM station, Human Crafted Radio. This is your host, Wes Gear. Also, this show is brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. So, if you're looking for a recovery program, they have a variety of programs and they do great work. There's a lot of shadiness going on out there and a lot of people that do it for the money and not for the caring. I know these people, they do great work. So, New Vista Behavioral Health, if you're looking for somebody to maybe do residential or outpatient treatment. So, this is Rock Recovery Radio. Why are we here? Gosh. Well, every week I kind of explain that. I'm a sober dude. Somehow I did not die due to my addictions, even though I had like things like suicidal ideation and all this madness going on. And somehow, which by the way, I just took 11 years of 100% sober, not a drink of drug, not even weed. Anyhow, when we get into this lifestyle, many of us get into service. You want to help other people, and then you find that's the greatest fulfillment. For me, instead of chasing like women and cars and money and fame, which never did much, you get into helping other people and you start going, wow, I feel really happy. I didn't want to go take dude to a meeting, but man, I'm happy now. So chasing that, but also what we feel like with doing this radio show, we can bring guests in to tell their story, how they overcame their struggles. You listen, you find out, oh, I went through that, or I get that. Okay, so maybe this answer can work for me. We've all been touched by addiction, mental health, you know, PTSD, traumas, traumatic brain injuries. We've all been touched by something or know somebody. And so that's what we do here in Rock Recovery Radio. We interview models and actors and musicians and rad humans and doctors. Had a couple doctors on. And that's what we have today. Very beautiful doctor, by the way. And so, man, you got a lot of stats. You know what I mean? We usually give the little pitch like, okay, you know. So you had some life-altering trauma years ago, which I'm not going to reveal yet. And you're a self-made millionaire. That's a big deal. And you're an author. And you're a doctor of divinity. I like that. That's cool. You're an author. You wrote The 40-Day Guide to Unleashing Your Spiritual Powers, Life's Purpose, and Manifesting Your Dreams, exclamation point, which I love. Forbes magazine named you 11 most influential spiritual entrepreneurs. Why did they pick 11? Is that a spiritual number? I think so. Or was it 10 and you're like, yo, just go one more. I'm just kidding. And you have online courses available and a big online following on meditation, detox, which I'm sure is several types of detox, love, and awakening. So I could go on and on and on. But you've appeared in, you name the different media outlets, Fox, Fortune, New York Times, LA Times, Forbes, et cetera, et cetera. You've been there, done that. I'm kind of jealous, I got to say. I need some more of that in my life. Anyhow, welcome to the show. Dr. Aaron, do you go by just Dr. Aaron?
Yes, my brand name is Dr. Aaron.
It is, right?
Yeah.
I didn't want to screw that up.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the show. Yeah, I'm so happy you're here. Thank you for driving down yet another person from Los Angeles that I got to make the pilgrimage to Laguna Beach.
It's a commitment. That's how much we love you, Wes.
It
not
going
to lie. But now I feel your pain when you came on Good Morning La La Land, right?
Well, you guys, so I go, they have a cool online morning show that streams to every app or social media outlet or whatever there is simultaneously.
And
you
guys, Roku and iTunes and da da da. Yeah, it's Monday through Friday. And you were on it twice.
I was on it twice. Right? And thank you. But yeah, so you start so early that I could never drive. Like I have to be there at like 7 a.m. So I'd have to get up at 3 or something to do my hair and all that. So I just stay in L.A. Yeah, I got 14 hair techs that, you know, I got to get out. No, but I have to stay the night ahead. So I have to get a hotel because the traffic, you know, it would be hell.
Yeah. Oh, God.
You got to look fresh for the morning show. And I've been pretty pleased with my outward appearance on your show.
The hair's working. The hair's working, just got to say.
Thank you. Well, today I didn't have the hair techs. So thank you for coming down here, and I appreciate it. I mean, it is the beautiful Laguna.
It is absolutely gorgeous, the drive down here, I'm not going to lie. Kind of like it. It's probably the least I've, you know, been in front of the computer for the week, the drive down to Laguna.
Oh, yeah, gotcha. So see, that's how I try to entice people that come down here. Is like, you really want to get out of L.A. more than you realize.
L.A.'s amazing. Honestly, I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. But the trick to L.A. is to get out so that you can truly appreciate it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about Laguna. Mm-hmm. I go to Los Angeles and I deal with the parking and the traffic. And I like, back to Laguna, I go. But I get it. The opportunity and rad people up there like you.
It's the yin and yang.
Yin and yang. Mm-hmm. So... And as my brother would say, that's why they have chocolate and vanilla.
Yes, which do you prefer? You don't have to justify it. You know, you want to sit there and go, I like vanilla because...
Yeah.
No, you just like vanilla chocolate. You can't explain it, right?
Yeah.
You must have got a landmark for him.
I haven't, no.
No, your brother must have. Because they use that big analogy a lot.
Oh, do they?
Uh-huh.
I don't think so, but I'll have to ask mm-hmm. him. So, Dr. Aaron... Mm-hmm. Usually when we do these shows, this is a little atypical. I'm just going to throw it out there right now for our our listeners at home or in your car, whoever's podcasting, what have you. Typically, we have somebody who's like 100% sober, you know what I mean? And that's how I am.
I'm drunk right now, so yeah. Just kidding.
People are like, what? Oh, my God. Yeah, I didn't smell anything on you. But that's not your story, and that's okay because this is about recovery and not, even though I know to the core of my being, if I start with a beer, I might be okay, and then I'll go to the, and I'll just be back to where I'm that guy. I have the allergy 1,000,000%. Once I start using, I lose all control. Okay, not all people are that way. But so I kind of gave away a little bit of later in the show, but what I usually talk to the guests about is, where does your story start? Now, we don't necessarily blame our life or our challenges on our childhood, but for you, where would you start it?
I love that question because I was thinking about that. Like, how do you still have your story but not have it be about a, you know, poor me kind of victim of my story, right? So my story, you know, I typically talk about the stillborn that I had at 22, but really my story is about growing up in a hippie commune, a semi-hippie commune in the hills of Santa Barbara, which pretty much sums up what really went on, which was... No rules, no regulation, no religion, no structure. My mom was best friends with Joe Cocker, so there's like lines of cocaine going across my coffee table.
Is Joe Cocker synonymous with cocaine?
Pretty much. If you know Joe Cocker, yes.
Okay.
So I had a really kind of chaotic childhood.
Is everybody just having sex with each other? You said no rules, commune. I'm just thinking.
I have no idea. All I remember is I remember looking out my living room window, which was on the second level of this upside down house. And I remember looking out to the neighbor's like backyard, and there was a garden, and there was this drunk guy gardening. You know, he was drunk, just like having a blast.
He was your neighbor?
Yes. So it was like, that was kind of like.
But he was in the commune. He was your commune.
Well, it was kind of a commune because everyone just kind of, you know, walked into every other place, and there wasn't really any structure to all of it.
Were people walking around naked? I don't know what a commune is like.
I don't know. I think it's just like, well, usually it's about where everyone lives together, and that was pretty much how everyone did. Yeah. So coming there, then coming up in Santa Barbara, where it was just a lot of chaos. There was a lot of drugs and alcohol in my high school. You know, people started having sex and drugs and everything, even in junior high, and everyone just kind of, people either went to jail, they ended up in rehab, or, you know, luckily they had some structure and made it through the dark side.
So you saw, even in junior high, because people at home can't see your face, you're kind of like being dramatic, it was pretty gnarly. You noticed that, like the drinking and the lifestyle.
It was, you know, it was gnarly, yes.
Well, junior high, mine didn't get, it was high school.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, everyone, I remember, just to be really cruel, we took acid in seventh grade.
Whoa.
I remember taking acid in seventh grade, and I remember...
You're like 11 years old?
Yep, that's how it started in Santa Barbara.
Were you in the commune at this time?
No, we had moved down to Santa Barbara. But the good thing is I actually didn't like drugs and alcohol. So I tried something, and I went, no, that's not for me.
How'd you take acid at that age, like, How did that come to happen? Was it peer pressure or was it your family and the
No, it was like all the kids. Oh. All the kids were latchkey kids mm-hmm. hanging out in the streets, and you know, the dealers would come along, and it didn't look like dealers. They're just normal high school kids, and right. you know, it was like, oh, let's try this thing, right?
Right.
Luckily, I didn't like drugs and alcohol. I was very fortunate. It was not my thing. But I fell into what I would consider love addiction, meaning that my entire life was to get the next hit off of, you know, what is my relationship status? It would be a roller coaster up and down. And just so you know, this is the first time I've ever really talked about this.
This is good.
In a you know, public interview, of course. I've done it in the rooms. I've done it in my ministry and all that stuff. But my real story comes to when I have a stillborn at 22. And that's where I always talk about my awakening. I rarely get into the chaos that happened before that.
Yeah, and when I do, and so thank you for sharing vulnerably and such. And so when I do this show, I like to spend that time because I want to know who the people are. And what I've found is oftentimes they kind of revisit some stuff, and it's not the blame game, but go, gosh, I didn't, not that they say it that way, but it's kind of like, oh, you didn't really think about how your whatever mom was more of an issue than you thought. And I'm not taking credit for that, but when we dig down, it's all about where we come from.
Well, and I was talking about that with Rob from the show. I was thinking about how sometimes we think we have such blessings of whatever it is, but actually, if you take a look at life, for me anyway, I've realized that some of the hardest things I've ever gone through, and even the situations of, say, my parents getting divorced and my dad going off and having another family, is actually been one of the biggest blessings of my life, because it has demanded me to do my inner work. It's demanded me to find God. It's demanded me to, you know, arrive to a life beyond my wildest dreams in ecstasy with divine.
So the difference is, don't play the victim game, but use it to activate yourself for deeper work. Yeah,
for sure.
And most, dare I say most, there is a large portion of people that don't do that. And we live in a great time where people are our parents, pretty much it's like, stuff your feelings, don't talk about the creepy uncle, don't talk about how dad hit mom, just wear the happy face, get out and be successful, do what it takes, right? And now we're like, well, no wonder you're such a weirdo. We got to deal with that, right? And process it in some way without using it as a justification for more bad behavior, right? So your parents divorced at what age?
Before I was two, so I don't remember them together.
Okay, but you mentioned it. So when your parents divorced, who were you on the commune with?
My mom.
So you're on your mom. Mm-hmm. That's even crazier. Now, if your parents are like, we're hippie, love people, and we're in a commune, we're together, but it was just a single woman.
And my mom was a total, she doesn't, hi mom, if you're listening, I've never said this, but like, she was a total codependent love addict too. It was like, you know, waiting for the next relationship that's going to make you fulfilled. And then you're going to be sad when it's, you know, having its lows. And then you're dramatic when it's over. And, you know, life is over unless you have that high of the next relationship. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that paints a picture. Single, codependent mom and you on the commune.
Naked, picking vegetables. No, just kidding.
I was like, Brad, that actually sounds cool. But okay, there's no naked vegetable picking. Ever?
No.
Oh, man. No. You guys kind of blew
it. I'm not a nudist either, gotta say.
Well, I did wonder about that. But maybe when I was a kid, not to go too far off on tangent, but when I was like before the age of five, I woke up, took off my diapers, and went up and down the street looking for cookies. That's what I did. Yeah. So I wasn't a nudist.
My mom said that when I was 1 year old, I would climb out of the crib and I would go out in the middle of the night and go roam the streets. Like up. And I was like, wow.
Wow.
That must have been pretty cool to see your 1 year old out on the streets in the middle of the night.
Yeah. It's awesome. A little different when we grew up.
A little different.
Because we're like 30 years old.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you're living with mom, single. Single mom, 2 years old, your parents divorced, and then you're having issues with relationships, in a sense. Are you using them to fix you?
Well, I mean,
and how'd you come to be pregnant?
For me,
I know. Thanks, doctor, but I do know that.
Okay, so first of all, the burns and the bees. Okay. So for me, it was one of those things that growing up in Santa Barbara, it was like the programming was so deep. I mean, everywhere you looked, it was like, how pretty are you as a woman? Can you catch a man? All the movies were like, you know, happily ever after when you get with a partner, and then it's, you know, this fantasy thing. So it was just
that.
It was just a ton of programming.
Marriage is a destination.
It's a destination. It's going to complete you, blah, blah, blah. So basically, then I never liked drugs and alcohol, got into some of the relationships, had a lot of heartbreak, and then I became I was date raped. This is like, I swear, this is like, okay, so I was date raped when I was 16. Whoa. And then it spiraled me into bulimia from 17 to 20. And then I thought, well, if I just get married, then that will solve all of my problems.
Because then you probably had self-worth issues from the rape.
Of course, just so many things,
People take it personally, right?
Yeah, and your dad's left and blah, 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 right? So then what happened was I got married and I got pregnant right away. And I was 9 months.
So 22?
So I was 22.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was in nursing school. I had pulled it together enough to go to college and went to nursing school. And I was 9 months pregnant. And I remember reading in What to Expect When You're Expecting. If your baby stops moving, you should go get it checked out.
Yeah.
So I went in and the nurse like put the lube on my belly and immediately saw there was no heartbeat.
Ultrasound.
Yep. Uh-huh. And she goes, you know, let's take you over to the hospital. The doctor will meet you over there. And he came over and he's like, yep, your baby's died inside of you. And you can either go home and you can, you know, go into labor naturally, or we can induce you. And I'm thinking, my baby's died inside of me and now I've got to give birth to his body. Okay, cool. Let's do this thing.
Insane. Did you lose it, or how was your reaction to it?
I think I was totally numb. I was completely in shock.
I feel like that's what I would do.
And then, like, you know, 6 hours later, you have the baby. At that point in time,
so they induced you right then?
Yeah, and you bathe your dead baby, you dress your dead baby, you take pictures with your dead baby, and you go home without your dead baby.
So why did you do that?
It's just the grieving process that they recommend in the hospital. So the next day I woke up.
That's interesting to me.
Yeah, it was really fascinating. Right. So the next day I woke up and I was, first of all, my parents had a flu. Don't ask me how that happened.
How did that process go?
It was a bundle of joy, let me tell you. No, it was like,
Sense sarcasm.
So this is the deal.
Were you losing it?
Okay, so I wake up, and this is how whacked
post
up.
Delivery.
The next morning I woke up, and I thought, I didn't get the right pictures with the right clothes with my baby.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, a little Looney Tune. So I went down to the mortician's house alone with a bag of clothes, and I was like, yeah, I want to take some more pictures with my baby. And the mortician was like, oh, sweetheart, I'm so sorry. Your baby's been in formaldehyde for 24 hours, but let me set up a room, and you can take as much time as you need to grieve. And so it literally is a scene out of the movie. I walked down in, 22 years old, no parents around. Like, where was everyone? I walked down into this basement. It was these red drapes, like a scene out of the movie. And I just, dropped the bag knowing I'm obviously not going to be taking pictures. And it was just this hospital bed in the middle of the room with this little body. And I just sat there like the lump in the throat.
So they pulled it out of the...
Yeah. And I just like sat there thinking, how could life be so cruel? And if there's a God, how could it be like this?
Sure.
And I was crying and crying. And then it was literally like one of those moments in a movie as well, like a flash of light. Like I was like, oh, we're not... He's gone. His body's here. We're not these bodies. And I just like, I committed at like a soul level that I was going to figure out what my spiritual nature was and what the F we were doing here.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry that I literally almost got like sick to my stomach when you told me that. And I tend to be kind of a numb, you know, when things get that heavy. I was like, I felt like somebody punched me in the stomach.
Yeah.
Wow.
So needless to say, it's been 24 years since that happened, and I've been on a seeking track, and I, you know, just really feel like I've come to the truth, and it's really freeing. I'm totally fulfilled as a doctor of divinity, and just dealing with reprogramming people's subconscious mind and bringing consciousness to mainstream. And it's been probably the biggest blessing of my life is having a stillborn. He gave me my life.
Well, I mean, and there's some people that would be like, well, yep, God had a plan, and that's why, 100%
right.
Why I did. So let's throw in your song here. Which
one?
Well, it's the first one. Are we too early for Rihanna?
No.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, okay, cool.
All right, so where's my... Oh, I got the wrong mouse here. See, I don't know what I'm doing. So this is Rock to Recovery Radio. We're here with Dr. Aaron, KX93.5 FM. I'm your host, Wes Geer. And why did we pick, by the way, Rehab by Rihanna?
Because that's my drug of choice. That was my, you know, that's my heroin. And I have a good story that I've never really shared out there. So, yeah.
All right. So we'll talk about it on the other side. We'll be right back.
Baby, baby, when we first met, I never felt something so strong. You were like my lover and my best friend, all wrapped in one with a ribbon on it. And all of a sudden, when there, I didn't know how to follow. It's like a shot just spun me around, and now my heart's there. I feel so empty and hollow. And I never give myself to another the way I gave it to you. Don't even recognize the ways you hurt me, baby.
Damn musicians.
these dang musicians. So, well, here we are. First of all, I got to be a professional right now.
Adulting.
Adulting, yeah. Well, you know, I got to be a radio guy and say, this is Rock to Recovery Radio, and we're back. And I'm your host, Wes Geer, on KX93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM, also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. And we're sitting here with Dr. Aaron, who has done so many amazing things. But my favorite part is you're a divinity doctor. But you are a love addict.
Yes, I would consider that. Mm-hmm.
You lost the baby when you're 22. It was stillborn. And so, okay, just to give you the rundown, the what you missed last week on this on the show, was you were living with your single mom in a commune in Santa Barbara, and you felt like love was always the answer, and you chased that for a long time. And you were date raped at 16, and that led to some issues for you. But the way you thought you'd fix yourself was through marriage, right? So you got married, and then through that got pregnant. Mm-hmm. I think everybody understands how that happens. And then you were in nursing school, and it seemed like something was up with your baby. You had it checked out, ultrasound, no heartbeat beat. You were induced to deliver a stillborn baby, and you're in a dark, dark place. And then you had this like white light moment almost, it sounds like, where you realized the difference between a living being and a non-living being was the spirit, and you made it your goal to go after and understand that. Mm-hmm. You said it better, that last part.
You summed it up pretty well.
I do have a memory once in a while. excuse me. Where do we, so this, you're now inspired. You were saying how you use this episode instead of just to go into a fit of depression and stay there. I almost feel like you're tapped by like God's magic wand, mm-hmm. not to sound too hocus pocusy about it, but because it seems like it was a spiritual shift that happened in you as opposed to like, well, I'm going to make a decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where is that delineation? And,
good word.
You know, I interviewed the high priestess Rita Alit down in Bali, and her story is fascinating. I think it represents a lot for all of us because she had a spiritual awakening, like a lightning bolt hit her, and she basically, the truth streamed in instantaneously. Mm. And I think for me, my awakening was instantaneously in some ways and so prolonged in other ways. And some people, it takes a very long time to have their spiritual awakening, and sometimes it can happen instantaneously. For me, it was a long journey. I knew and I had seen the light, and I had touched on divine, but it was a long time of living almost like a double life. Like after that happened in that mortician's house, I had a double life. I literally would be out just in the normal world, you know, in just typical culture in America. And then I would be literally in my closet doing meditation morning, noon, and night every time I had a chance, seeking and reading and going to all the seminars and going into the rooms and going into finding Science of Mind and New Thought Ministry, which is my lineage I'm in. But I had a double life, and it was really fascinating. I would be, I became more successful in my business, and I was even more unfulfilled I thought if I just get more money and more accolades, I began to buy and sell real estate and do all the stuff on one side, and then I was doing all my spiritual work on the other side. And there was another point where I went, this doesn't work for me anymore. I love my spiritual work, and this is the most important work I'm doing, and I had to really hand my life over again. So I think it's different. For me, I didn't find it like only one time. Like I've had to surrender and then surrender and then surrender some more, you know.
That makes sense. I've heard, you know, there's stories and a lot of documentation out there if people want to look up these white light experiences where people have total upheavals. But oftentimes you hear that it comes if we don't do the work, they lose it, right? And we have to use that.
That's why they call it a daily spiritual practice, right?
Totally, yeah. So there's a couple things, though. You were in nursing school and you bailed.
I did.
Okay. And then you said you were in the rooms. What rooms were you in? Because you've named a few things.
Sure. So, you know, the seeking, as I began to see, this was 24 years ago. It wasn't like everyone today where the universe is your BFF and you've got yoga studios on every corner in California. So I just started seeking. I was totally anti-religion. So I began to seek everywhere. And, of course, I went in the rooms. I went to Landmark Forum.
What's the rooms? Okay, 12 step.
Yeah, 12
okay.
step. Yeah,
okay, we're trying to be cool here. Keep it anonymous.
Sorry.
You're talking about, I appreciate that.
Yeah, 12
that.
Step, yes.
12 step rooms, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I landed.
Why would you go, okay, what 12 step, well, here's what I'm saying. Was it for substance abuse or other 12 step rooms?
Yeah, so the song that you played was Rihanna, checked into rehab or whatever it's
uh-huh.
called, right? And for me, I consider my greatest addiction. I don't identify because we can talk about this. I don't identify as a love addict because I know my true identity, which is a spiritual being. But in a human realm, I identified as a love addict because on my course, after saying I am committed and declaring to figure out my spiritual nature, I also was in and out of a relationship. And that is where I would notice that I would put all of my higher power into
yeah.
my relationship, and then I'd become the effect of the roller coaster that life is.
Yep.
And so for me, I had to go in and break my cycle. And I truly am an advocate for 12-step, for breaking your cycle. For me, I didn't find a great fellow. I'm not an alcoholic, so the fellowship is really strong, in my opinion, around alcoholism and drugs, but it's
yeah.
not as strong in some of the other areas. So for me, I didn't find my fellowship there. I didn't find my community there. I found it in Science of Mind and New Thought spiritual centers.
Great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not all things for all people.
Yeah.
Alcoholics Anonymous has a singleness of purpose to help people recover from alcoholism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that makes sense, you know? And just like NA, they make their focus drugs, and then there's OA, which is about eating. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
totally. They all use 12 steps, but their focus is different.
Yep.
So I get it. Yeah. And that's important that people know that you got to go and, you know, you listen. Our brain loves to find the ways we're different so we can talk ourselves out of anything. But if you got a problem, maybe go into the rooms and see if you hear the similarities. Like, ooh, yeah.
Oh, I'm yeah. always like, girlfriend, you got to go 90 days and 90 meetings right now. Get your ass in there.
Yeah.
Break that cycle.
Yeah.
Don't bitch to me. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of different support groups and 12-step stuff, and people really have to just go search it out on their own, yeah?
For sure.
Yeah, so you said there was another bottom you hit. I relate to the relationship stuff. It's still a struggle for me. My friend, who knows my story well, for example, you know, I've had to change careers multiple times, and then I got the corn gig, then I didn't have the corn gig, and then I tried all these companies, and then finally Rocked Recovery took off. So he's like, wow, man, you've manifested everything in your life except the woman. And I was like, oh, man,
yeah.
That's like the thing. But like you, my thing lately has been like, there's nothing wrong with me because I don't have, sometimes my brain will try to twist it to like, you know, your life is amazing, but you don't have a girl. You've
right.
really screwed up. It's like, no, my life is amazing, period. And from that point, I believe something can happen.
Right.
And that's kind of new for me.
Well, I think it's interesting because the stats are actually that people are just as miserable in relationship as out of relationship. So it doesn't mean,
oh.
right? So
yeah.
It doesn't mean that your life is going to be complete or not
right.
complete if you're married or not married. That's a total lie.
Yeah.
And if you take a look at stats, it's really just you're either happy and fulfilled in or out of a relationship. So it doesn't have anything to do
I
with
love
that.
That.
So I think that that's one of those stigmas and things that the culture really needs to get over. Like
some
really
people are
over.
Stoked in a relationship.
100%. Some people love being single.
Yeah, exactly. And I talked to because there's a bunch of my single guys and I, and we're all decent looking guys. And, you know, we have options of dating. And it's kind of like we just realize that it's like, really, we just like being single more.
Mm. I mean, it's just,
some people don't. They'd rather be in a relationship.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, working with clients and doing subconscious work, we always get to the fact that, you know, you can tell what someone's committed to because you can look at their life.
Mm.
If you really wanted to be in a relationship, you'd be in a relationship.
Yeah.
Right? It's really that simple.
It cuts so deep.
I know. It's so sad, right?
So tell me about your other bottom. You said you started dating a musician.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, God,
musicians.
Girl. Why would you do that?
Yeah, I know. So what happened was I was on the spiritual track. I had literally been meditating for, you know, years and years, had all this revelation, was feeling so amazing, having enlightenment moments. Like, my life was getting so good. Mm. I became a self-made millionaire. I was, you
and
know,
that
just
was through
doing,
real estate?
Yes, through real estate. Mm-hmm. And,
okay.
And I was just, my life was really going well. My son, I'd gotten pregnant a month to the day after my stillborn. My son, you know, was
same
doing
husband.
Well. Yes.
Okay.
My life was going really well. I had dysfunctional relationships. Like, they were dysfunctional, you know, in and out, ups and downs, da 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 da. So I was kind of like, okay, that's kind of not working so well in my life. And then the universe and God has a real good plan to, you know, when you're ready to wake up, when you're ready to see your stuff, it's going to slam you down so that have to break down for the breakthrough. So lo and behold, I was set up with a Grammy-winning rock star.
Well, wait. Hold on. Okay, hold on.
But you
had a stillborn with the dude. Then you got pregnant right after that.
Mm-hmm.
From your hubby,
uh-huh, yep.
Which we shan't name.
Yep. We got divorced when my son was two.
When you're two. Okay, so mm-hmm. Right
we had
after.
Joint custody. We actually did good.
And like, was that when you have a stillborn and you stay together, it didn't sound so dysfunctional.
It wasn't so much that. It was that I never really was in love. And I had to make amends to him. You know, it was like, I was too young and naive. I didn't even know who I was.
And you just came out of the trauma.
And it was not, I mean, I wouldn't consider it really dysfunctional. It was just that it was, again, I was placing my happiness into a relationship that wasn't working. So hence I wasn't happy, right? So then I went into other relationships and they were up and down and da da da. But then the rock star came along.
Yeah.
Oh boy. So
are we going to say his name?
No, of course not.
Of course not. No. I don't know why. It's not of course to me. It's like, oh, okay. No problem. I respect that.
Yeah, no. But it was fascinating. So, yes, he was a Grammy-winning artist.
Well, we already know there's lines with Joe Cocker. Was it Joe Cocker?
No.
I don't see you and Joe as a match.
Definitely
sorry.
Okay. So I fell madly in love. And he was a recovering addict. He'd be sober for about 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd fall off and then the disaster would happen and he would, you know, end up in a hotel room with some woman and da da da. And then he would beg for me back. He would show up with tattoos of me on his body, you know, and shit like that. Oh, I'm not supposed to.
That's
that.
Right.
Sorry. Needless to say, I thought I would save him and fix him and be, you know, God. And needless to say, it didn't work out so well. I ended up literally in the lowest of a low of my life, in a ball, in my bed, not wanting to live, like going, how did I get here? How could I be this evolved and do all this work and be, you know, working with people and then end up in this? I was like, what is going on? I was so confused.
Man, I feel like that happened to me too. So you're singing my song. So how long did this go on? I mean, I get it. At first you meet and you're like, he's cool. And then you mess up once. Okay,
right?
Twice. And then next thing you know, you're like, it's been 2 years.
It's literally like, for me, it was the experience. People are like, oh, no, it's you. You're the addict. I'm like, what are you talking about? No, if he's a jerk, he did this, he whatever, all that stuff. And then you realize it's identical to being a heroin addict because I could be broken up with him and be like, okay, I've never seen him again. I'm not doing this. It's over. I'm healing. And he'd show up on my doorstep and literally he'd be moved back in. The heroin would go in my arm.
Yes.
And I would be completely back in love.
Ooh,
with blinders all on.
Yeah.
And then then 3 weeks into
thinking
that.
Thinking this time it'll be different.
This time it's going to be different.
Yeah.
You forget everything you're up to. Everything goes to the side. All your friends, all your health, everything. 3 weeks later, you wake up because he's fallen off the wagon again and gone off. And you have the biggest hangover ever.
Emotional hangover.
And you're like, how did this happen again?
Yeah.
It's bizarre. So I do finally understand what it's like to be a heroin addict.
I had a really bad relationship like that too, and I likened it to the same thing. It acts like a drug, it gets you really high. And usually, in my experience, if we go into these kind of relationships, they tend to be the really, but I have the deepest connection, and we're so passionate, and the sex is so good.
Yes.
It comes with all this other
stuff.
It was
so good. The heroin's really good.
Yeah
heroin's
right.
Amazing.
You get all, it's the high is super high, and the lows are super low. Mm-hmm. And then the challenge for me, and I don't know if you had this, was like, okay, so then when you go out and date somebody who's just nice and normal and available, it doesn't feel like heroin because it feels like an aspirin. You don't feel it.
Right. Which is such a fascinating conversation. We get into this a lot about spirituality and the soul and our polarity. And polarity is really what causes what we consider, quote, chemistry. So actually when you feel really, you know, a lot of chemistry with somebody, generally it's because you've got a lot of healing and this person's pulling up that belief that needs to be healed, that trauma, that stuff. When you are with somebody that's really, you're growing and expanding, it doesn't necessarily feel like chemistry. It feels like creativity, and your life gets better and better and better. It's a really interesting distinction.
Go back. I got to understand. Go back. So I have healing. So what's happening? So let's say you're a crazy girl, and I'm doing pretty good. I've got some healing time. What are you pulling out of me?
So, for example, if someone has a belief and they have a command from trauma from this lifetime or other lifetimes, and it's like love hurts, love abandons, right? So the only person that's really going to bring on that polarity is somebody that can equally mentally match that at a soul level.
Right. So that's law of attraction.
Yeah. And it's the same with polarity. So anything that is needed to heal.
And it works on dating sites too.
Yeah, it does.
No, I'm not even kidding. I helped my spirituality through dating sites because I kept meeting the same girl, and I realized, and then I talked it all.
Senior cycles. Oh, you're just my cycle showing up again. Cool.
And I talked to energy healers, and then I found out that they could heal over vast distances, and they're teaching me time and space doesn't matter. And then so you're like, oh, it's not that I thought your picture was cute. It's our souls communicated on a level we were unaware of, because almost unequivocally, if I drill down on a girl I meet on a dating site, she had an alcoholic father or stuff like me.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, makes so much sense. I get it. Okay, so you're dating this guy. It goes bad. How does it end? How do you?
Oh, it was a long.
Did you get suicidal at all?
I wouldn't say suicidal. In that, I would never have taken my life because
but
I.
Did
signed.
You think about?
Yes.
Me too. Because the pain's so great, you're just like,
gosh,
maybe I should kill myself. Well, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
But anyhow, yeah.
I mean, I'm so thankful for my son, because if I didn't have my son, I very well could have happened.
Yeah, for me, it was my mom.
Yeah. It was a low of low. And then it was, multiple lows. So then I was dealing with PTSD from all of it, because you're so traumatized, not because what they do, because the meaning and the high, high emotion in those states. And then you command in all these lies, and then you're just like, your soul and your whole being is so messed up. And that's a distinction I think people, is the most important thing. No one can make you upset.
Right.
No one can make you upset.
It's what is it? Life is 10% what happens to you, 90% your reaction to it.
I would say it's more like 100%.
Okay,
you react to it.
That's an old saying. I want to say it's like Mark Twain or some old guy. There's also another
some old guy, some dead guy,
some dead guy. Push up daisies. There's another saying though, in the recovery program, I was taught that like when you're disturbed, it's something inside of you, and that's hard because you're like, no. Clearly, Bob was a jerk.
Why?
And then so I use, here's my dumb analogy. Let's say you won $100 million and Bob did that very same thing to you. You're like, I don't care.
Exactly.
I got $100 million or whatever.
Exactly,
right. Or the prettiest girl or guy in the world asked you to marry him, whatever. So it proves that sometimes we wouldn't be affected. It's really how we react to stuff, isn't it?
100%. And I do remember one time I was talking to a guy. He didn't even live here. It was long distance. And I remember over the phone feeling like I was falling for this guy, thinking, oh, this has nothing to do with it. This has totally what to do with what the meaning I put around it. And I'm generating these feelings. And we put it into the other person because we think they're having us generate these feelings. It has nothing to do with the other person. It has to do with what we're experiencing in our own soul.
Oh,
and
man,
we can generate that with or without a relationship. And yes, of course we want long-term relationships. Of course we want healthy relationships. But for me, I have a lot of love, a lot of people, a lot of family. Does it need to be in one person? It'd be great. It doesn't have to be.
No, it doesn't. I'm learning a lot. This is great. I hear a lot of me in you. In your words, you're singing my song.
I know.
Yeah.
Rihanna.
Yeah.
That's the song.
So how does it end with Grammy dude?
Oh,
who
man.
Who has tattoos still on you.
Yeah, right.
On him.
How's that on your crotch, by the way, with your
crotch?
Next girlfriend? Just curious. Or on your neck. Yeah.
There's several, huh?
Yes.
On your
crotch.
Yes.
That's
got
to be interesting for the next girl. Just,
It was funny because it was not a dramatic ending. It was so dramatic so many times. And what happened was, I remember when we would break up, it was like a heroin addict.
I would miss him so much. I would only remember the good things.
Oh, yeah.
And as soon as he showed up again, I would, fall to his demise. And then what happened was, over time, when we would break up or he'd fall off the wagon, I would get relief. It was I would start to get better when he wasn't in my life.
Uh-huh.
And over time, that got more and more strong. And I was going in the rooms, trying to deal with myself in the middle of it. And then just the last time, he was like, come and, stay with me while I'm doing the show, blah, blah, blah. And I remember being on the phone and being like, no, thanks, though.
Yeah.
And I hung up the phone and that was it. I never talked to him
again.
And
on the other side, you felt good.
It was just, I just knew it was done. And everyone told me that, though, you'll be done when you're done. And no one can help you get there. And you're going to have to go through as much as you got to go through. And it was exactly like that.
These are those love gurus that are telling you that. Nobody told me that, but it was true. Oh, man, I don't have no love gurus.
You are a love guru.
Of what not to do.
I think it's awesome that you have all of your fellowship and all that. And I love your whole brand. And you know what's so funny? I got to show you after the show.
Did you get a Rock to Recovery tattoo?
Wait. Yeah. No, wait. I have to tell you that. I have to show you a picture from, I think it was like 2014, that I was with the Grammy winner. And I thought, oh, my fantasy addict that I am, a love addict. I thought, oh, how he's going to stay sober, because I'm going to save him.
Yeah.
And it's all about him. Is we're going to create this brand called Freedom and Sobriety.
Mm.
And we're going to bring out and have a sober like community and have concerts and da da da.
Oh.
I have the like logo to show you. It's like so many years ago.
Wow.
Of like, yeah. So yeah, pretty fascinating.
For those of you who don't know, because not everybody knows that listens to the show, Rock to Recovery. We do music therapy, but we also do a yearly fundraiser that's 100% sober and 100% rad.
And Good Morning Loveland covered it.
Yeah, you guys did the best coverage. But we've had Stone Temple Pilots guys and Corey Taylor from Slipknot and Mike Ness and Chester Bennington even performed. And who did we have last year? Moby. We had Moby.
Nice. I went to high school with Chris from the Help me out. The band you just said.
What? Chris, Moby, Gun, who? What band? Oh, Slipknot?
Yes.
Oh, you did? Wait.
No, sorry. Oh, my God. I'm completely having a brain
Stone
fart Sour? Here.
Wow. Who cares?
Okay.
All right. We went there. Anyhow, there's a lot of us musicians. We're easily confusable.
So many of you guys.
Yeah. So let's put in this other tune, right?
Let's do it. Which one? Which one are you going to play?
Sonny Mayo always makes fun of me for saying right. He's like, dude, you always say right?
It's such a California thing. Right?
I want to make sure. So here we are. Okay, this is Olivia Newton-John.
Okay, so this is just so you know, this is my happy, sober, fully awakened, like this is my jam.
Okay, and I love this song too. Oh, I think I was starting to say it last time, but I didn't. People always love to say, hey, no offense, I don't listen to stuff like Korn. I don't listen to stuff like Korn. That's the funny thing. I love stuff like this. Well,
and this is about like the voice and the divine within. This is that partner. That's your higher self, God.
I love it. So this is Rock to Recovery Radio. I'm Wes Geer. We're here with super rad Dr. Aaron, and we're gonna feel good right now with some Olivia Newton-John.
You should know.
She's so cute, that Olivia Newton-John, that cute
adorable.
Little voice. She's adorbs. This is Rock to Recovery Radio, KX93.5 FM. I'm your host, Wes Geer. Also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. I'm sitting here with Dr. Erin, who's telling her an amazing story of a lot of craziness through the childhood and having a stillborn child and dating a rock star Grammy addict, which you will not divulge the name. I can find it out somehow, but we'll respect the anonymity. And you did some, you know, you went into the rooms, you tried some 12 steps, mm-hmm. some love addiction stuff, et cetera, et cetera. After the Grammy, well, what I'm leaving out for people who maybe missed it is after you had to deliver a stillborn, you felt activated to really search out spirituality. And that was a lifelong mission. But along with that, you had the challenge of getting in bad relationships, or at least this one, mm-hmm. which is something I can totally relate to. I love it when you said, like, I have all this spiritual progress. I'm doing all this work. I have years of just growing as a person, yet I have at least some part of attracting this bad scenario into my life and doing it over and over and over. I can relate that to that. That happened to me at 7 years. 5 to 7. Anyhow, so where does it go from here? How are you activated to finally make the change and get where you are today?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a track, and I had to, it's kind of like we have to try out everything. It's like going to college. You know, you don't know what your major is, but you got to go try all the different courses and figure out what works yeah. for you and what you vibe with. And I really like the 12-step for breaking the cycles, for sure.
Yeah.
But for me, I found my grace in what's called Science of Mind, not Scientology. Science of Mind or New Thought. It's now spiritual, Centers for Spiritual Living. And for me, it's all based on Socrates and Emerson and universal law and how our subconscious is connected with the universe and basically how we're manifesting. And so for me, it all added up. When I found Science of Mind and I had been meditating, I'd had, you know, seen through the veil of life and felt one with everything,
uh-huh.
but it didn't necessarily explain how it all works. And so for me, when I found that lineage and I understood how my subconscious, how in those traumatic incidents I had programmed in and commanded in limiting beliefs and how I was beginning to experience myself in this limited self. And so I began to do subconscious work, began to find things like Socrates' method and Greek oracle processes of reprogram the subconscious mind, which really freed up and really healed myself. So all that trauma went away. It's like I can look back on that terrible relationship. I can look back on my stillborn and I can go, that sucked. And it's not ruling my life today.
Right.
Yeah. So just I became a spiritual practitioner, and then I became a minister, and then I became a doctor of divinity. So 11 years later in that process, just been a great, amazing, amazing journey for me.
I love it. Well put. And you mentioned Dr. Michael Beckwith is also a doctor of divinity, which a lot of people, I bring that up because a lot of people know him at Agape up in Culver City.
Yep.
The Agape
same lineage,
Church.
Same through Emerson, all the same schooling.
Mm-hmm. Is that Emerson in Boston?
Nope. It's okay. Up by San Francisco. Mm-hmm.
Got you. And I love it that you're talking about not being I read this guy Paul Selig, and he channels ascended masters, a lot of people say the same stuff, but basically it's like we sometimes frame ourselves at this person, and in some ways, like, I had to do that. I had to say, well, you know, I'm an alcoholic, I'm a drug addict, yes, I had this in my life. But when we wear that frame around us forever, it boxes us in and we can't transcend it because we're always identifying with that. Mm-hmm. We don't want to ignore it and pretend it's not there, but we can't let it be us.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing, I think, especially the 12 steps. You know, how do you identify as, but know that you're not that? You're a
yeah.
all-powerful spiritual being.
Yeah.
But I think it's the humility and remembering what is programmed in. And if you're not able to really go and reprogram your subconscious mind, then you have to fully accept the reactions that you have and work with what you got.
Yeah. So if somebody's at home going, oh my God, I want to reprogram myself. Right? How do I do it, Dr. Aaron? You have something you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, well, we're launching what's called Soulcity. And I'm super excited about this. So our mission is to be the number one spiritual leaders community in the world. And part of that is there's different levels. And the first level is really having a community around understanding how to reprogram your subconscious truth. I have a program called Truth Triangle, and we birth the three aspects. We birth your true identity, your true powerful aspect. We birth your true unique truth, because it's ultimate truths and relative truths. And then we birth your purpose and calling. And this is done through understanding the suffering that you've gone through in this lifetime and all lifetimes, and having it transcend into what you're really here to complete and the legacy that you're here to leave.
I love it. I could go on and on for this. I truly love this stuff. But we're out of time.
Oh, no.
Dr. Aaron, thank you for coming down here. And everybody who can't see her, she's a beautiful soul inside and out. Also the author of Awakening, a 40-day guide to unleashing your spiritual powers, .. And Soulcity.
They can find me at just draaron.tv on website, on all Instagram, Facebook, everything. Just DREREIN.TV. Just let's engage, you know, have fun, be friends, do whatever. You can get involved with the community, or just have fun with friends in Southern Cal that are up to good things. Cool, hip, badasses, you know?
You know it. You're rad and you're doing the deal. This has been Rock to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Wes Gear, with Dr. Aaron, and we're out. Have a great day.
Peace out.